Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
A lot of what my work is fighting for is that I see these weavings, even the ones that I didn't make, as fine art. Like, I see, like, this is interesting. This is abstract. This is minimalist abstraction in a lot of ways. This isn't Annie Albers' piece. You know, like, this is, that's how I see these blankets or placemats that these women wove without that intention. And I hope, and I think by recontextualizing how they're framed, literally, I'm kind of saying, these are fine art. You know, this is complex. Yeah, right here. And even, you know, and this one that I didn't make, the same thing, you know, like, so I hope it comes across. And if, you know, if anybody were to see a weaving that they made that I've reused in one of my pieces, I do it in like an appreciative way. Like, this is amazing. And this is how I think, this is how I see it as fine art. You know, maybe I manipulate some of what they do to accentuate the beauty that I see in it or the complexity that I see in it.
I'm so delighted to welcome Lauren Salazar and Melissa English Campbell to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Informed by the history of abstraction in painting, Lauren Salazar turned to weaving as a method to create her own canvases and to explore the sculptural aspects of painting. Lauren earned her BFA from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and her MFA in studio art from University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Her work has been shown nationally, including shows at the Art Center in Norfolk, Virginia, ArtLink in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and the Yeiser Art Center in Kentucky, among others. Lauren lives and works in Davidson, North Carolina. And Melissa English Campbell is an American fiber artist, painter, and weaver. She holds a Bachelor of Science from the UC Davis and Master in Fine Arts from Kent State University. In 2022, Melissa transitioned out of teaching and into full-time work in her Kent, Ohio studio. Melissa's work has been exhibited in Ohio at the Hedge Gallery, the Kent Museum of Fashion, and the CAN Triennial. Her work has been exhibited both nationally and internationally, including at the Royal Albert Museum in the UK, in Seoul, South Korea, Como, Italy, the Museum of Texas Tech University, the New Bedford Art Museum, and the New South Wales Museum in Australia. I am delighted to welcome both of these artists, weavers, and mothers to the podcast to chat with me today. Welcome, Lauren and Melissa.
Hi.
Hi, thank you. Hi.
Thank you for being here. My first chat with artists who are working on a loom, which is kind of crazy considering how many artist mothers work in textile, but I don't think I've specifically talked to weavers before on the podcast. So very excited to have both of you. Let's start by having you share something about your childhood that connects to your life as an artist today. I'm always interested to know if you always wanted to be an artist or if it kind of came into your life at a later time. Melissa, why don't you start for us?
All right. I gave this some thought. I knew the question was coming. And what I think happened is that, yes, I knew that I was the most comfortable in my art classes than any of my other classes. And so it made sense to me that I did become an artist. And I think a lot of my childhood was spent navigating changes in cultures and locations and languages. So the other experiences, you know, on the playground or in classrooms, I was always like pedaling faster than the other kids to try and figure out what was going on. But then I would get into the art courses and have no self-consciousness kind of hobbling me. And I was very confident handling the materials or the assignment. And I don't know why, but yeah, I think looking back, that's when I was the most comfortable as a child.
Awesome. I love that idea of how, you know, in every other area you were kind of, you said pedaling faster or just like trying to keep up. But then I had this image of like in the art spaces, you could kind of float a little bit. And
it's exactly it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Lauren, what about you? I'm curious to know if you, you know, if art has always been a part of your life or if you saw yourself becoming an artist as an adult.
Yeah. And I don't think that I thought that being an artist as an adult was really a possibility until I was more in college and decided on that as my major and going to grad school. Then I was like, oh, this is like a reality. But I think growing up as a kid, I like Melissa said, I loved my art classes. I took, you know, the highest level that was offered, but I didn't feel like that was necessarily a possibility as a profession. We didn't really grow up going to museums in my household or galleries. But I just loved art. And I think even though we didn't do those formal things, there was a lot of exploring in my childhood. Like I grew up in woods and building forts and just really exploring with my siblings. And I think that way of thinking informs my practice even today. I think I'm a pretty disciplined person. I played soccer through college. And I think that some of that discipline is reflected in how I make and just like my thought process with things. So
I forgot you played soccer. We have so many similarities, Lauren.
Really?
Yeah. Barbara Campbell Thomas had told me that. And she was like, you and Lauren have so much in common. And then you're like, I grew up in the woods and that influenced my practice. And that definitely is a part of my story too. So have you lived in North Carolina your whole life?
I was born and raised in North Carolina and then only left after grad school. I moved with my husband to Texas for 5 years to Houston. And then once we had kids, we were like, we need to move back. We need to move back home. And so I came back and I like being near family. So I like being here. Yeah.
Okay. And I don't want to take too much of a detour on this, but I just found the part in your bio, Melissa, that I cut out about you being born in San Francisco and, you know, being part of this gypsy hippie caravan that established the farm in Tennessee. Could you just briefly share about that and maybe how that, you know, you did talk about in my first question, like kind of navigating cultural shifts in your childhood. And I'm assuming the way you were raised and that whole hippie culture is a big part of that. Do you want to say anything about that?
Sure. I was the first or the youngest member of the caravan when it first started. And then I was one. And then as the caravan drove from San Francisco and meandered through the Midwest and ended up in Tennessee, no more babies were born. But we settled in Tennessee and started that commune, the farm. And I had a sister born there.
And that was with the natural childbirth expert.
Yeah, with Anna Mae Gaskin.
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. She was, yep, she helped deliver my sister. I was already born when the farm started, but she was definitely there when my sister was born. And everyone had turned their caravanning vehicle into a home. And my parents had an old school bus that they took all the chairs out and turned into a home. So yeah, in the back of the school bus, my sister was born with Anna Mae Gaskin delivering.
Wow.
And we stayed there, I think, at least till I was four. And then they decided to expand the commune into Europe. And my parents were part of that expansion into Europe. And my mom is Dutch and she was raising us bilingual. So it seemed like a natural fit. And we ended up in Amsterdam. And then they you know, they got distracted and joined another commune, I think a Sufi commune at the top of the Alps. And then that led into something in London and yeah, so there, and then back to Holland. So, a lot of changes, in my childhood that, sort of required a lot of adaptation.
Wow. Lauren, I don't know if you struggle with jealousy. I always say that I don't struggle with jealousy, but when I hear people talk about childhoods like that, Melissa, like traveling around the world and being part of like these subversive cultural experiences, I'm like, oh, I'm so boring. I grew up in the same place my whole life. I, you know, my parents love my parents, but did not do much traveling outside of the US. So, I definitely am like green.
The grass is always greener because I was always just so jealous of the kids that knew what house they were going home to, who knew, so you know, funny. What was happening next week. And it just seemed so unfair.
Yeah. No, it just seems like you had such a creative, like, unique upbringing. And I'm like a, like, pointlessly competitive person and get jealous. And I'm like, oh, I just, you know, it feels like, you know, you have a leg up when you have a childhood like that. Not that I didn't, mine was filled with love and
yes,
like wonderfulness, but it was, you know, perfectly typical in a lot of ways.
I think a lot of strength comes from that perfectly typical strength that then, yeah, that I had to figure out later in life. So I think there's pluses on both sides.
Pluses. And I also like, I think kind of the balance of both is nice. Cause I did a lot of traveling like in my, you know, age 17 to 25. And I do contribute those years of travel to a lot of the opening of my worldview, you know, and like considering other cultures and really the formation of my artist identity. So, you know, you just got that a little earlier than Lauren and I did, Melissa.
it was like a growing backwards. So then I had to figure out how to be more stable and dependable. And you guys had that foundation to start with. So
it's and just now you're backwards. In four walls in Ohio. So boring. Just kidding. Okay, so let's talk about your art, both of you. I would love for you to describe the work that you make and a bit about your process. We're going to talk a lot about the trajectory of your process and how you got to where you are now. But first, if you could just kind of describe more broadly what the work looks like and some of the major themes that you're, you know, kind of considering in the work. We'll start back with you, Lauren.
Okay, so I make, I guess, what I call framed woven abstractions. I love and was trained in abstract painting and quickly started using fiber in my work. And from there developed the practice of weaving and learned how to weave. And I loved the history that it talked to in terms of women's work. And so at this point in my work, I use weavings, I deconstruct them and install them on frames, and then really look at them kind of like a sculptural paintings. How can I explore the components of painting three-dimensionally with canvas and hue and frame? And that's kind of the problem I give myself in each of my pieces. And yeah, I guess that's awesome. Like,
beautifully said. Melissa?
My work always contains layering and repetition of some sort, some patterning of some sort. It almost always includes fiber and or fiber making techniques. And my themes are often the disruption of those repetitions. So laying a foundation of structure and then seeing how I can introduce chance and movement into something that's normally really static and flat. And I just keep exploring those themes over and over in my work.
Awesome. Okay, so before we dig in to talking about how you arrived at the process of working with the loom and weaving, just briefly, could you tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are kind of outside of your art career so they have a little more context? If you work another job, how old are your kids? You know, are you in a partnership? Like just a little bit about, you know, who you are as a person. We'll start back with you, Melissa.
I'm on the older end of the spectrum of the mothering community. My children are 20 and 23, and I have a husband, and I'm in my second year of being a full-time artist. Prior to that, I was a professor, a full-time professor at Kent State University in their School of Fashion, and I juggled my studio time and teaching time, and now I'm just 100% studio. And we've been living in Ohio for 13 years, which is wow. Is amazing. prior to that, we lived in Scotland, and prior to that, we lived in Iowa. And I think as a kind of a response to growing up so nomadic, settling in one place is sort of my revolution.
Awesome.
Staying in one place for more than 2 years is like I won something. Yeah. So staying in Ohio has been great. I'm really happy here. I think Ohio has been a great place to finish raising our kids and to be an artist. There's a lot of resources here.
Awesome. Lauren, what about you?
Well, first I want to say I'm jealous that you worked at Kent State, because I went there one time as like for a lecture and in their fiber department. And I just think it's an amazing place, and all the looms and fiber that they had there. I wasn't used to seeing that. So anyways, that's a great place. But I am, other than being an artist, I stay at home with three children who are 8, 6, and almost 4. And they're great. I have my two oldest are boys and my youngest is a girl. And I'm married to a guy I've been with since like high school. So he's actually head of an aerothermal department at a company here. So we have very different interests when it comes to what we do professionally. But we're kind of each other's biggest fans in either regard. And we have a pretty happy little family, and that are interested in both, I guess, the sciences and the arts, which is nice.
Lauren, are your kids in school full time? I'm assuming the almost 4 year old is not quite yet.
She still has one more year after this before she goes to kindergarten. Okay. The other two are in kindergarten and second grade.
Okay. So you're kind of juggling her being at home with you and producing your work and managing your career.
She goes to preschool 3 days a week for 3 hours on those days. So, yeah, I mean, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, but I could always use more time.
Yes. You know? I've said this on the podcast before, I think, but 4 is a magic number. I think when it comes to your youngest, like if you can get to your youngest turning 4, it feels like things really get a lot better. So you're almost there.
And I don't want to wish my time away. You know,
absolutely.
Like, oh, I don't have babies anymore. You know, but at the same time, I find myself a lot of days like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
When they're older, I'll have time.
Totally. Okay. So let's talk about your work. Obviously could have had both of you on separately. Your work is so interesting and amazing, but I just thought it would make a great point of conversation for you two to talk to each other and for me to, you know, prompt you to share about how you arrived at this very unique practice and way of working as a visual artist in terms of incorporating the loom. Lauren, I know you were traditionally trained as a painter. Melissa, I'm not so sure about, your training or your background specifically, but I would love for you to kind of both walk me through how you ended up, you know, getting introduced to this medium that, you know, I've personally had no experience with or exposure to. And so just curious about, you know, to me, it feels like a very unique and special thing. Maybe we'll start with you, Lauren, since I already said you were trained in painting and you can talk about your transition and then you can share, Melissa.
Sure. Like I said, even in my kind of final years of undergrad in painting, I started using thread as a form of line making and grid making. Mm-hmm. You know, Barbara was my teacher and she loves exploring the grid and breaking open the grid and moving past it. And I think I'm obviously influenced by her in my way of thinking. And so I saw thread as a tool for that. And I carried that I went straight to grad school after undergrad. And I was using thread on frames. And I was challenged by my professors there to kind of delve into the conceptual side of using that other than just for formal purposes. And, you know, what is the history of fiber? What are the histories of some of the practices in fiber? And so in between my first and second year of grad school, we were actually in Texas for an internship for my husband. And I took weaving lessons with a wonderful woman there named Tracy, and immediately bought a loom after that and felt like, oh, I can't make without this in a way, because the loom and weaving just like is literally building a grid or cloth line by line in a very organized fashion. And I just felt like the possibilities were endless in terms of what you could create on it and the doors it opened. And it also allowed me to talk to generations past in my family, in, you know, the roles that I hold. Women in my family historically did weave. I didn't see looms growing up, but I have placemats and table runners from women in my family who made those by hand. And all of a sudden learning that craft, I felt like I was able to talk to them and understand them and where I came from in a different way. So that's how I started weaving. And it's just really only my love for it has only grown as I've continued to learn and use the practice.
Amazing. I love that you just had a couple weaving lessons and you dived right in. Like that's
it was pretty... one summer. Yeah, it was one summer. So it was like every week for a couple months. And I just felt like, oh, this is a tool I need. Yeah. If I want to make art, this is how I have to do it.
Yeah, I love that. Maybe we'll come back to that point. That's a really lovely thing to think about. Melissa, do you want to share about your journey into introduction into the loom?
I think there's a lot of parallels in that it did. It was like a language I was missing, and it helped my expression, and it helped say what I didn't know what I was trying to say, and then it was like the root of that. It helped to kind of establish that, and there's something with the repetition and the structure, and then the exploration of how to disrupt that and how to break through that. But first, you have to establish the rhythms and the structure, and then you get to explore disrupting them, and just that kind of push and pull between the two. That's what helped me say what I wanted to say, and it helped me explore what it was I was trying to explore in my artwork. So it kind of closed a loop. My history is more in fashion design. And before that, I was in an advertising program in an art school in San Francisco. So nothing to do with creating fabric. So I was introduced to the loom. We had a weaving course at UC Davis, and I was the worst in the class. We had to pair up because there weren't enough looms for everyone in the class. And my partner, Rudy, he was amazing. And he threaded the loom. He figured out the structures. He had the patience of a saint. And him and his girlfriend would come in late at night and kind of break into the weaving lab and secretly weave because they loved it so much. And then I would come in and they would have done my assignment. And I was so grateful. I loved them. They saved me in that class. And so I never thought I would go back to weaving. And then when I was in grad school, I was at Kent State where they have an amazing textile program and loads of looms. So you don't have anyone to save you because you have your own loom. And I was also, 30 years older. I was a very old grad student. I had more patience. I had more ability to focus. And then something clicked. Mm-hmm. But if you had asked me in my 20s, no way. No way. But in my 40s, I was able to do it. And that, it turned out to be the missing piece.
Wow. I love that you kind of had that resistance at first. It took some time and reintroduction. And then Lauren, for you, it was like almost immediate, this is the thing that I need. Just shows like that we don't all have the same path. It doesn't always have to be this like, it all clicks and it's magic and here it is. It's like, no, sometimes it takes, years of development and reintroduction and, resistance and insecurity around something. And then it kind of comes back around. So thanks for sharing that, Melissa. I would love for both of you to talk just a little bit more about like what your process in the studio looks like. What are you, how do you kind of engage in a project in work that you're making? What does, deconstruction or construction sort of look like for you? And also, like, was it really hard to learn the loom initially? Is there a steep learning curve? Are you kind of always coming up against, challenges with, the technology of it, for lack of a better term? Lauren, let's start with you.
Well, in terms of my making process, it's the same, but kind of shifted over the years. I used to, and I still do, I used to weave everything. And then I would look at a frame and see what size I was dealing with and what shape I was dealing with. And I would kind of attack the frame with the weaving I made. And I'd try to figure out how to go through the frame, behind the frame, out of the frame, just really trying to explore that three-dimensionally with the weaving as a piece of cloth, as a canvas, and also as individual lines. So like deconstructing the weavings that I had made, oftentimes leaving warp or wefts unfinished so that I could deconstruct them or unravel them and then reapply them on the frame in a different way. Mm-hmm. And it's changed a little bit now because I love the idea of using traditional weaves because I like the histories that it speaks to. And I've realized like I don't necessarily need to weave these traditional weavings. Like I can find some of them, in thrift stores or in vintage stores. And speaking to those is interesting too. It's interesting to think about, I'm not just recreating these histories that I'm wanting to speak to. I'm literally using them. And then, so like in recent work, I will install a weaving woven by someone else that I've found, and I will manipulate that weaving how I see fit or in terms of creating something abstractly that I think, looks interesting and so that's changed a little bit, but I still currently have, pieces on the loom that I like to apply with these prefabricated pieces as well. But it all ties to formal, painting and sculpture, and also the practice of weaving specifically. So I think that's kind of my making process on the loom. A lot of things start on the loom and the practice is very important, but then it's really made once it's off the loom and I'm mm-hmm. trying to apply it to frames.
Yeah, well, I think the interaction between the frame and the loom is like obviously kind of this key component to your work and something that I find so interesting and unique. You know, and that's where the like painterliness really comes in for me, is like the problem of how these two things are interacting and how you're like, you know, warping and folding and, you know, kind of even painting the frame. Like, I know that is like a whole section of your process, like choosing a paint color and painting the frame and making intentional decisions about that. So I love that, like, again, I just don't, it's not, the problems that you're kind of working with in the studio are not problems that I am seeing being investigated in the same way right now. So it just feels like very exciting. I wanted to talk to you just really briefly about this idea of, you know, the deconstruction, because you create these like, and Melissa, I'm sure you have maybe some things to chime in here too, because you talk in your work about disruption and deconstruction as well. But just, you know, something that came to mind as you were talking, Lauren, was a popular quilter that I follow, painter Ann Quilter, that I love her work. And I'm not going to say her name because I don't want to like misquote her, misrepresent her. But in a conversation, you know, we were talking about how a lot of painters now use textiles and they thrift, you know, these quilts from years ago that somebody else made, and they're bringing that into their work and they're cutting it up and deconstructing it. And just like, is like kind of like just juggling with the integrity of that kind of experience. And what this artist said was that, you know, she thinks there is integrity to that experience when the particular artist using that material also has the practice of quilting themselves. Like, it's only okay to like cut all this stuff up and deconstruct it if you've also explored that process in your practice, so that you understand the full journey and the experience and the integrity of making a quilt, for example. And like, you might be listening to this and totally disagree. I'm just, that opinion really stuck with me, because that is something that I do in my practice, is, you know, I thrift these materials, I cut them up, I do different things with them, collage them. And there's been a question in my mind of like, is this okay? Like, somebody made this with care and intention, and now I'm just going to kind of cut it up and put it in a painting. And I think that idea of like really exploring quilting from start to finish as a medium has not only helped my artistic practice just in general and my skills as a textile artist, but just helped me like understand the integrity behind, you know, maybe deconstructing some of those things in the future. And I don't know, I think about that in your work, Lauren, because you talked about that exact process, how you created all of the weavings yourself. And then you were like, well, I could also incorporate some of these ones from other people. But I don't know, for me, it's important to like also create them yourself.
Yes.
You know,
I agree with what you're saying. Like, it's nice. It's important, just like in terms of deconstructing somebody else's work, to know how it's made.
Yeah.
And that is important. But I also think, like, in terms of context, a lot of what my work is fighting for, I guess, is that I see these weavings, even the ones that I didn't make, as fine art. Like, mm-hmm. I see, like, this is interesting.
Same as
this
quilts.
This is abstract. This is, you know, this is minimalist abstraction in a lot of ways. This isn't Annie Albers' piece. You know, like, this is, that's how I see these blankets or placemats that these women wove without that intention. And I hope, and I think, by recontextualizing how they're framed, literally, I'm kind of saying these are fine art, you know,
yes. This is look concept. Here.
Yeah. Right here. And even, you know, and this one that I didn't make the same thing, you know, like, so I hope it comes across. And if, you know, if anybody were to see a weaving that they made that I've reused in one of my pieces, I do it in like an appreciative way. Mm-hmm. Like, this is amazing. And this is how I think, this is how I see it as mm-hmm. fine art. You know, maybe I manipulate some of what they do to accentuate the beauty that I see in it or the complexity that I see in it. I certainly don't want to degrade anyone's right. handmade work, you know, because right.
And I even talk about that in my artist statement, just about how, for me, it's the continuing of a conversation rather than like a disruption or destruction of something,
right.
you know?
Right. Yeah. You're not using it thoughtlessly, you know, right. like it's very purposeful why you're choosing these materials and what you see in them for your work. So, yeah.
Melissa, chime in. What do you think about all this?
I think, first of all, Lauren's work has always struck me as a beautiful balance between the tension that she creates in her mm-hmm. compositions, and a sort of like there's a acceptance or a resting or the word's gone, sorry. But there is this dance that happens mm-hmm. in her work. And I feel like, I'm projecting my own life experience onto her pieces. But I feel like that frame that she uses to kind of dance the fabrics in and out of and create tension and places that of holding is sort of a metaphor for the frame of the structure of life, of being a mom in a routine, in a home, in a community, just, you know, all the structures that you fit in, that it's really hard to break out of, and also that you enjoy. So mm-hmm. you're not necessarily always struggling against it. You're sometimes celebrating it. And I think for me, that's what Lauren's work is saying. Mm-hmm. And I think using other fabrics, it doesn't hold any concerns for me at all. I feel like it's bringing more into her community of mm-hmm. her structural community, her process community. It just, it's growing her network of resources. It's inclusive. And mm-hmm. I never thought to have concerns about fabrics found in thrift stores used in artwork. It just never occurred to me.
Come to the mountains with me. I am planning another artist retreat in the mountains of North Carolina, and I want to meet you there. We have hosted some epic retreats in the past in this community, starting with the Artist Mother Retreat in 2019 in Tennessee and our 2022 retreat in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And we are headed back to that same location in North Carolina outside of Asheville this coming June. And this time our retreat is for all female identifying or non-binary artists. You do not have to be a mother. We are making the circle a little wider and more inclusive. So this is going to be hosted through the Thrive Together Network, which is the online community for women identifying artists that I run and co-host with Jamie Smith, an artist from Vancouver, Canada. Jamie will be joining us at the retreat. And we are just so excited to bring you sort of the same format as we've had in the past, but with lots of exciting new faces and a freshed up feel. So this retreat is a 3-day retreat with a mix of fun, experimentation, rest, and lots of connections. We will have 4 fantastic workshops. one paper and encaustic exploration to nurture play and experimentation with Kelly Shepherd Murray. That one's going to be so amazing. Kelly was recently on the podcast and she's going to show us how to work with paper and make little sculptures and then how to dip those in wax and do encaustic. The second workshop is sculpting a painting with Lauren Salazar, who's actually on this episode right now. If you are identifying with Lauren's work and want to get to know her, you can meet her at the retreat. She's going to be doing a workshop and showing you some tools for how to sculpt a painting. And then, of course, the beloved founder of the Artist Parent Index and great artist, Sarah Irvin. She's going to be there and she is going to be hosting a workshop called The Writing Artist, From Manifestos to Art Criticism. We're going to talk about how art writing is super important and influences our careers. And then finally, our last workshop is going to be with Heather Bird Harris, an amazing artist from the Atlanta area, who's going to talk with us about connecting with your community through social, newsletter, and activism outlets. Can't wait for that one with Heather. She is incredible. So along with the workshops, there will be lots of downtime so you can enjoy a hike, you can take a nap, you can do some shopping, some writing, some sketchbooking, really whatever your heart desires, right? This is your time. Each evening, we will be gathering for conversation and connection, and this will be centered around an art supply happy hour. So think drinks, desserts, 30 plus artists playing with materials and getting to know each other. It's going to be so fun. The retreat location is 25 minutes outside of Asheville. It's very easy to get to. You can take an Uber from the airport. And Black Mountain, this town where the retreat center is located, is just the sweetest little mountain town. It has great views. It has a little downtown with shops, restaurants, breweries, and just a very laid back and fun Appalachian mountain vibe. So if this all sounds good to you, I want you to hear this, okay? We are offering an info session all about the retreat so you can get all your questions answered and learn everything there is to know about what we're going to be doing before you commit and buy a ticket. So the info session is Thursday, March 30th at 1 p.m. Eastern or 10 a.m. Pacific. I will be putting up a replay link if you're hearing this episode after that date and you still want to watch that info session. You can head to www.thrivetogethernetwork.com/retreat to get all the details. The Zoom link or replay link, again, will be there for you if you miss the info session, so you can still reserve your ticket after you've watched that info session. And we are going to have an early bird ticket rate window that will start right after that info session is over. So that is going to happen March 30th, and the early bird ticket rate window will close March 10th. So we don't want you to miss this discounted price. If you're considering coming to the retreat, definitely check it out and get on it as soon as possible so you get several hundred dollars off your ticket for that early bird rate. Really, I can't wait to come together to meet you at the retreat, to just share in community in real time. So many of us are just Instagram friends or social media or online friends, right? And this is just the most beautiful setting and scenario to come together and get to connect. Really, these retreats are in my top art memories in my whole art career. And I know this one is going to be super special too. So feel free to bring a friend, invite a friend, come as, you know, a group, or just come by yourself and soak up some solo adventuring and make some new artist friends at the retreat. Hope to see you in the mountains. All information is at www.thrivetogethernetwork.com/retreat. Melissa, what about your own process? Do you want to talk a bit about, you know, what you're making in the studio, how you kind of go through the process of creating works? And maybe you want to talk a little bit about the figure, too. I know a lot of your works reference, you know, faces or figures, which to me is like incredible to have these, you know, this dance between realism within this material that is so, you know, it's so different from taking a photo or making a painting of something. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think For me, I had to find a place where I could give myself permission to mix abstract and figurative work. I didn't know that was allowed when I first started. So I was really timid about introducing it. So I started out abstract in my paintings and in my textiles. And then I really wanted portraits on them. And I was like really tentative. I was in grad school and it was behind closed doors. I painted a portrait on my warps and I was like so shy to show anyone. And then weaving the painted warp altered it in this most delicious way. And you could barely tell it was a portrait. But there were hints of it, and that just lit a fire for me. And I was still really timid about showing it. And I thought, oh man, I'm creating something grotesque by altering someone's likeness so much. I felt guilty. And then the weirdest thing happened. I would go for long walks and listen to art podcasts. And my favorite at the time was the Great Women Artists podcast. And Katie Hessel had on Roberta Roberts. She's a collage artist and painter who should be everyone's art guru. And she just totally blew the lid off of that fear that I had. She talked about how she does worry about making them grotesque, but also doesn't, and just the way that she balances it, and how it lets the image speak by distorting it, giving voice to something voiceless. It was like it gave me permission. So then I started to explore it more, and it's I've been doing it ever since.
Incredible. okay, this is going to make me sound very ignorant, but speaking more about the actual process of building a piece on the loom, right? From my perspective, it kind of seems like there's a lot of forethought that has to go into what colors you're using. You know, you have to set up this whole thing, right? That becomes sort of the frame of, you know, what the weft and the weave, right? The weft, right, is kind of the structure that you then put the, no. The weave, tell me.
The warp.
The warp. There's so many W words. I said I was going to sound ignorant. But, you know, I understand at least at a minimum of how it works that there are, you know, strings, threads that you set up that become the structure within which the other threads are held.
Yeah, you got it.
Just to me, that idea of like, I got to make a lot of decisions at the very beginning for the result of this piece. Like that is all, it is not at all how I work in the studio. Like, yes, of course I make decisions on, you know, I'm going to choose to use this piece of textile over this piece, but my work is like very process, like, you know, from start to finish, there's this whole journey that I go on when I make, you know, particularly a mixed media work or a painting and textile combo work. And just that idea of like, you know, a lot of prep decisions making ahead of time is intimidating to me. I'm wondering if either of you want to talk about that. And again, well, excuse my ignorance.
I think that like traditionally, a lot of times weavers, it is a lot of planning. And when I was learning, it was like, I'd fill out this sheet of how much yarn I'd need. And generally people wash their cloths after they're off the loom. And so you have to account for like shrinkage when you wash something, and which I don't do. And I've gotten to the point now where I'll know like, oh, my frame's 36 inches. So I'll do a 2-yard warp, which is a pretty short warp when you're thinking about weaving. And I guess what I'm trying to say is there is some planning, probably more so than just starting with like a blank canvas. Right. I love that structure. It's like a jumping off point for me. But I also, I kind of have developed a shorthand with the type of weavings that I do. Now, Melissa, like painting her warps and the care that she takes on the loom, I feel like oftentimes your pieces come off the loom and they're done. And and mine don't really exist like that, at least in my mind. I feel like they come off the loom and it's like, okay, now I can use them. You know, okay, now I need to.
And that process is what I resonate so much more with, Lauren, in, you know, what you're doing with the, you know, the woven pieces I'm doing with textile, right? Yeah. It's like, that is the starting point, whether I've thrifted it or I've made a quilt block or what. And the blank canvas, no, I don't want that, but I want the like material to begin. Yes. And, you know, as you said, like Melissa, your practice seems a little more calculated and like from start to finish. You know, I know you even use photos and you like pixelate the photos, I think, and then it's like this whole gridded system to make the work. And like that whole process, I'm just like, I don't know if I can do that.
I think the process is part of the fun for me. I think just weaving wouldn't be everything I wanted to say. So the setting up, the planning, the process, and then I leave room for that, all of that to just surprise me once the weaving starts. All of that, I think, is baked into the piece for me, for it to feel complete, like it's a piece that I finished and made. And the planning, a lot of that happens in my head. I used to have to do a lot of driving. I had, you know, I was a minivan mom and carpools and sports events. And I would be on the freeway just planning the weavings in my head. It was like part of my studio time, all the driving that I used to do. It probably kept me sane. And once my kids didn't need to be driven around anymore, I kind of missed that thinking time. And I had to find a way to reintroduce that into my routine. So the planning, I like it a lot. And then I also like that it can all just be for naught, that it just, that turned out differently than I expected. And so, and then respond to that. So,
well, in your work, Melissa, I think, you know, you have an idea of what a piece will look like when you've painted your warp, but then, and I'm talking about, I guess, more of your portraiture weavings, but then when you weave the weft in, the way that it abstracts what you've painted and adds complexity to what you've painted, but you still see that underlay. I love your work. I think it's really beautiful.
Thank you.
And your work is something that, like, when I first saw it, a lot of weaving that I see, it's like you know exactly how they did that and you understand it. And when I first saw your work, I was like, how did she do that? Wait, what? You know, I thought, yeah, I'm very impressed.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. A few more questions before we wrap up. I feel like we just need a studio visit because this is much more like just shop talk than a lot of the interviews I do. I'm wondering if both of you could just talk a little bit about the intersection of art and motherhood, you know, anything you want to share, really, maybe some points of frustration, some compromises that you feel like, you know, some things that you feel like you are missing out on or did in the past. And then, you know, just what you feel like motherhood really teaches you about being an artist. Melissa, I want you to start for us, please.
Okay. Well, if I go back to when I was a grad student, my kids were 6 and 9. And I had to pay a childminder, you know, whenever they were home and I was in class. And as a result, I was really conservative with how often I scheduled time in the studio when the kids weren't in school. And I think that if I was to go back and do that again, that I would also include some time where I would hire a childminder for when I wasn't in class, but was just in the space to work on networking and building connections. Because when I left the program, I didn't have shows lined up. I didn't have gallerists that I had met, and I hadn't met curators. You know, all those art history majors are future curators and art writers. And all the people I graduated with who were younger, who didn't have kids, who could just kind of hang around and meet people and network, their trajectory was faster. You know, they had made connections. So I would say, as a mother, that if anyone's in grad school right now, include some childcare for just being in the space, even though you don't have a class scheduled. Mm-hmm. And so that slowed down the connections I made, or the ability to make a network and to make a community. And then I went into full-time teaching and part-time arting, and the kids were getting older and more independent, and I was doing a ton of driving because they went to a school that was a 35-minute drive away. So I had a carpool schedule that I was part of, and that alone time, that thinking time in the car, saved me. Mm-hmm. And now they're older and they're more independent, and my biggest concern as a mom is to just stay out of their way. I mean, COVID really slowed down the trajectory of young adults. And so whereas I would have just launched out of the house at 18, 19, they are launching, but they're doing it really slowly. And I have to remind myself that that is still launching, and I need to not be a speed bump and like, get in their way while they figure COVID world out and how to be adults in it. And how that impacts my art. Gosh, I don't know. I have more time to be serious about my work. And so all of the discipline and structure that went into mothering has gone into studioing. It's a natural transition. And so I don't know what I have to say about that. That is just something that happened naturally.
Melissa, I'm curious if before you had this flexibility and time for your work, if you kind of beat yourself up about the fact that you weren't getting in the studio often enough, or if you were always like, what would you say to yourself, now, if you could speak to that, student in grad school kind of trying to figure all this out with young kids, like, what would you say?
It's a long, convoluted answer.
the shorthand version.
But do you remember that study that came out of Stanford with the marshmallow, where the lab tech told the child that if they didn't eat the marshmallow while they were alone in the room, it would get more when they came back? I learned about that study.
Like that scarcity issue.
Yeah. I learned about that in high school. And our English teacher said, and that's the mark of a future successful person, is if they didn't eat the marshmallow. And I was just so filled with shame because I knew I would eat the marshmallow. And that made me kind of like feel like I had to hide a part of myself and like project success, even though I didn't feel it inside. And then we moved back to the United States in my 40s, and there was a radio interview on, I think it was Brené Brown or something. And she was referring to that study. So my ears pricked up. And she said, oh, no, it's been debunked, because if that child grew up with food scarcity or adults who were unreliable, they absolutely should have eaten that marshmallow because mm-hmm. that was the mark of someone who would grow up to survive.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, it just like burst this dam of shame that I had been holding. And with that, it just eliminated any shame that I used to carry about advocating for myself or saying what I needed or adding my voice to the family voice of what the family needed. And so the dissipation of shame, I would mm-hmm. say, is how I've learned to look after myself with all of the other looking after that, you know, that we do as moms. I no longer hold any shame about voicing my needs, you know, in a thoughtful, respectful way, but I do it without any weight or guilt. And so that's, I guess, how I take care of myself in the situation.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
The thousands of artist mothers who listen to this podcast are crying. Like that metaphor of like the shame dam bursting is so powerful. I love that you use that marshmallow study and analogy. And I heard that exact podcast that you're referencing and just advocating for yourself and not feeling like just because you choose to advocate doesn't mean that, you know, you're not, that's not a marker for success, right? Like it's actually, you know, when we are underrepresented and, you know, when our labor is taken for granted, like advocacy is a marker for success and we have to, we have to do it, you know?
Yeah, we have to do it. Yeah.
I don't know. Just so much goodness in that, Melissa. Lauren.
It's hard to follow up. Well, and also like I'm over here, like taking notes, like, you know, wishing myself into the mindset that you have developed. And, and I like a lot of the struggles that you talked about going through, I feel like I'm in the midst of in a lot of ways. So thank you so much for that.
And maybe I need a new little series pairing, you know, an artist who's a little further along down the life trajectory and then, you know, an artist more in
that
my
was really informative for me.
I think I think that if I think back on podcasts that have fed me the most, it is when there is a more experienced voice and a younger voice on the podcast and the exchange has just, it's fed me.
Yeah. And that intergenerational conversation, it just inspires so much growth, you know, and that's something that as a podcaster, I've been trying to get better at is engaging with, you know, the Helen Redmonds and the Judith Braun's and, you know, the artists who have been making work for 50 or 60 years. You know, those incredible women are often harder to get in touch with and to like schedule a Zoom conversation. And but it can be done. And it just requires a little more attention and care on my end. but yeah, like I just think, you know, those conversations are so valuable. And you know, not that you're that much older than Lauren and I, Melissa, but just being in conversation about the different experiences we've had. And it brings so much value. And as an artist mother, hearing that you do survive through it, you know, and you don't have to be so hard on yourself in the moment, I think is what is really important.
Yes.
To having kids be in a different stage of life. I feel like more than, you know, us being very different in age, just having our kids be different in age. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes, especially when your kids are younger, it feels like they're always going to be young and you're always going to have the young children issues. Mm-hmm. And so to hear how you navigated that and also how it's changed you know, in a good way, it sounds like as they've grown up some, it's nice to hear.
So inspiring. Okay. Tell me a couple goals that you all are working on? What is kind of currently happening in the studio or as art admin pursuing professional goals maybe in the next year? What are a couple things you have on your radar, Lauren?
Well, I'm hoping, I think my biggest challenge as just a person is to develop a better community. And in terms of networking and putting myself out there, I think I'd be perfectly happy to just like stay in my studio and make a million things a day. So I need to like expand for myself. So that's a goal. And then also I started this little like Tuesday project thing.
Yes, tell us about that.
Yeah, that you can see on Instagram. It's where I make a small piece once a week. And I guess my goal is to do that maybe for a year. But I also have a goal of figuring out something else to do once that's done, because it's been really good for me to make things at a different pace than larger works typically take me. It's been good for my brain and for exploring new things and experimenting. And so I want to find something else to kind of bounce off of that once that's done.
Melissa, what about you? Some goals that you're working on in the near future?
Yeah, I had to relocate my studio, and I had 900 square feet, and I had to relocate it into my family room, which is small. So I'm in the process of building something in my backyard that can be my studio. And so that's going to take a few months of focused attention, and then, you know, moving into that space and claiming it. And so that will definitely take the first few months of the year. And exploration wise, I'm scheduled to do a residency at a digital weaving lab and work on a jacquard loom. And I am very excited about taking those pieces off the loom once I've woven them and turning them into something three-dimensional and getting something more sculptural started. So that's, I'm like super excited about exploring going three-dimensional.
Amazing. Okay, well, let's close with our final five questions for us to get to know you a little bit better. Who is your biggest art crush? Melissa, starting back with you.
Well, I think Bridget Riley is, and Annie Albers, and then, but in modern day today, who I mentioned earlier is Roberta Roberts is, wow. Yeah. I'm in love with her.
Lauren, biggest art crush.
I really love currently, Jean Alexander Frater. I think, yeah, I just, I'm jealous of her work too.
Yes. Her work is amazing. Okay. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on? Our perspectives on travel are different. So Melissa, tell us.
Gosh, I don't know.
Cause I would say Scotland or the Netherlands and you're like, meh, been there, done that.
Yeah, I think that all those are amazing. I think the method of travel maybe is what I think about more, since travel itself, you know, is just such a big part of my experience of life. I think the ability to travel with companions that who are companionable and just as excited about place and staying in places where you can sort of stay and absorb the place a bit and not always be on the go, but be in the place. That is a lovely way to travel. And then obviously, in the winter time, it's nice to go somewhere warm, but I don't have like a specific, I guess I just don't think that way.
Fair enough. Well, Lauren and I can give you a huge list. Lauren, dream trip or favorite place to travel?
Yeah, I thought about this. Netherlands did come to mind. I'd love to go back to Bryce Canyon. I went there as a kid in Utah, and I just remember feeling like everything looked otherworldly. So mm-hmm. I'd like to see it now as an adult or take my kids there. So
yeah, good one. Okay, tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you, Melissa. Or just something you're currently reading or watching that you're enjoying.
Jerry Saltz's first book, what was that called?
How to Be an Artist. That just recently
came out. That's the new one.
That's the new one. I haven't read it yet. The one before that. I love that. He reminds me of my father. He comes from the same region, is the same age. His humor, I just adore it. I know he's you either love him or you hate him.
Yeah.
but I just love his little quotes. And I had the book out, like a coffee table book, for the longest time.
I have the new book. I just got it from the library last week.
Have you looked in it?
Like, no, I have not. I haven't even opened it yet.
Yeah. I would say that he grounds me. I like reading his little statements for some reason. He's something about him grounds me.
Lauren, film or book that's been a big inspiration?
I loved the Ava Hesse documentary and found it really inspiring and like a, you know, behind the scenes look at who she was, so I felt pretty inspired by that.
All right. Favorite meal, Melissa?
Oh my gosh. Let's say, I'm good. Can I say breakfast?
For some reason, I was like, she's going to say a stack of pancakes. That was just popped in my head. I don't know why.
Yeah, breakfast. And also, you know, in the Netherlands, pancakes are dinner. So, yeah.
Maybe that's why I was like, she's going to say something Dutch, pancakes. I don't know.
Something pancakes with applesauce.
Lauren.
I'm a big soup fan, and my mom makes this Cuban chicken soup, sopa de pollo, that I really love. It's probably like the most comforting food to me. Yeah.
Okay. And finally, who do you want to give a shout out to that supports you and your work, Melissa?
Well, my husband, who is amazing. He is also lots of free labor from my husband. especially since I'm one-handed at the moment. He's been my left hand for a few weeks now. And then I really want to mention my friend Kelly Dietrich, who has a little shop downtown here in Kent called Tropus Project. She just started it a few years ago to support local artists. And a majority of them are female-identifying mothers. She's just amazing. And I think Kent, Ohio is very lucky to have her.
Awesome. Lauren, shout out.
I'm going to copy the husband one. he's pretty great. And my parents have also just been a constant source of support for me.
Okay, both of you, where can folks find and follow? Obviously, we'll be posting, but it's nice for you to just say, you know, what's your website? What's your Instagram handle, Melissa?
My website is my full name, melissaenglishcampbell.com. My Instagram is ME_Campbell. And that's where I'm really the most active. And my website's pretty comprehensive if you want to get a real look at my collection of works.
Lauren?
Yeah, my Instagram is probably where I post the most and the day-to-day things, which is Lauren L. Salazar _art. And my website is laurenlsalazar.com. And that's just kind of more formal pictures of my work.
Yes, awesome. Well, thank you both. Great conversation. Let's do a studio visit.
Thank you. Keep talking shop.
Appreciate you and the great work that you're putting in the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.